Hey, it's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's a tough time right now for Wisconsin Badgers football.
The team hasn't won a game since the beginning of September, and it's on track for its worst season since 1990.
Fans at Camp Randall Stadium have chanted for the firing of head coach Luke Fickell, who is the highest paid public employee in the state of Wisconsin.
But athletic director Chris McIntosh is standing by the coach he hired in 2023. He says he's pledging more financial support for the football program to turn things around.
All of this comes as colleges fire an unprecedented number of head coaches, with other schools forking out tens of millions of dollars to buy out contracts.
We're checking in on the state of the Badgers and the role that money is playing in college football today. Jim Polzin is sports columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal. Jim, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, anybody paying a little of attention knows not a great year for Badger football. Can you give us some historical context for how this year's campaign stacks up?
Yeah, certainly. 2-6 right now. They haven't had a season like this probably since the early 1990s, late 1980s. When Barry Alvarez got here, he took over a program that was pretty terrible under Don Morton. Alvarez went 1-10 in his first season in 1990 and kind of started an uphill climb after that. And there's been a couple decades run of success here. And there's not been many dips in the road, a couple seasons where they missed bowl games, including last season. But to be 2-6 and underdogs almost certainly in their remaining four games. So the potential for a 2-10 season is there. We're talking historical stuff.
Once upon a time, if you said, do we fire the coach mid-season? I think the easy answer is no, of course not. Well, as we're going to talk about with our next guest, a lot of big-name coaches getting fired mid-season. What is the talk about the possibility of changing coaches mid-season now here at UW?
Yeah, I was a little reluctant to say because things can change on a dime, but let's just go back in time. About a month, Chris McIntosh thought it was so important to pull aside reporters after a loss, a home loss to Maryland, in which student section was cheering fire Fickell. McIntosh thought it was important to get out in front of it and pulled aside two outlets, including the one I work for, just to give a public vote of confidence for Luke Fickell. And here we are 4 or 5 weeks later. Things have gotten worse, probably. Chris McIntosh sent a letter to fans last week that could have been read in a variety of ways, but I think a lot of people read that as another vote of confidence for Chris McIntosh. And, you know, as we sit here with four games to go, I think if you were going to make a move, yesterday or today would have been the day to do it because they have a bye week coming up. And if you're going to make a transition, you know, you certainly want a little bit of time for the interim coach to go into it. So I guess that's my long-winded way of saying that I don't think anything's going to happen. I think they've decided, based on that letter to fans, that they're going to stick with Luke Fickell, not make a change, perhaps devote some more financial resources to this thing and try to make an impact in the offseason through the transfer portal and try to run it back for a fourth season under Luke Fickell next year.
Now, you wrote a while back, hey, fans, be patient with Luke Fickell. Yeah. You wrote more recently, yeah, maybe not. Maybe I was wrong back then. What has changed your mind?
Yeah, I mean, look, for context, I wrote in July, basically, that the fire Fickell crowd was already out by that point, and I thought it was only fair to be patient. And my main reasoning was a lot of the young guys in this program just haven't had a chance to prove themselves. It's long been known as a developmental program, and a lot of Fickell's best players or potentially best players are young right now. He had back-to-back recruiting classes that were very highly regarded, and those guys just haven't had a chance to prove themselves. And I thought, you know, tough schedule last year, tough schedule this year. The idea was show some progress and go into year four. I'm almost always a believer that coaches deserve 4 years to kind of prove themselves. I think what changed it for me was, you know, losing at home to Maryland 27-10 and losing 37-0 at home to Iowa and too many blowouts last year too. It's just, there's too many games where Wisconsin has not been competitive, and there's reasons. There's injuries are a concern and the tough schedule is a concern. But when you're getting blown out by teams that you should be competing with, the Iowas, the Minnesotas, the Nebraskas, I think that's a big red flag. And that's why it's hard for me to sit here and tell a fan who's, you know, devoted time and money and blood, sweat, and tears to be patient. I just think that was a very reasonable request to make at this point when with this team kind of in the shape it's in.
Talking to Jim Polzin with the Wisconsin State Journal about the Badgers football program, a bad year, some calls to fire the coach. The role of the coach at the college level has always been recruiting, right, and managing the training and the in-game management and more. Now we've got this new financial thing going on, the name, image, likeness, and being able to loot players from other schools. Where do you see the problems and how with the Badgers now, and how much of that goes to Coach Fickell and his management of one or more of those parts of the job?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated thing, right? I mean, I think I'll start here. Chris McIntosh said in that letter last week to fans, essentially, that they would devote more resources in terms of a lot of things, but certainly in terms of paying players, which I think is necessary to keep up with the Joneses in college football. So I think that was Chris's acknowledgement that Wisconsin has not done a great job. They kind of thought that this new era of college football with revenue sharing and NIL Go would even the playing field, and it very clearly has not, because some of the enforcement of NIL Go and other things to do with NIL just haven't gone the way that Wisconsin expected them to, and it's kind of pushed them farther back in this race. So I think that's a big part of it, that dumping more money into it is probably necessary. I guess my pushback would be that they have devoted money both in terms of NIL and coaching and funding this football program, and I don't know that Luke Fickell and his staff have done a good enough job of getting the right players in here, and once they get the players in here, developing them. I just think he has not done enough to earn the benefit of the doubt that giving him more money will make it work. So it's a complicated thing. I think the biggest issue in talking to fans is that there's no transparency. Nobody knows what the real numbers are. Nobody knows how much individuals are getting paid. No one really knows how much Wisconsin is devoting to NIL compared to others in the conference and beyond the conference. So I think that's what frustrates fans a lot, is that the level of transparency is not good. And I think if there's one request I can make of Chris McIntosh and UW, it's that show some numbers, show some transparency, and let people kind of know what the situation really is.
Here's one number that's out there, $27 million. That's what Luke Fickell would get paid to not coach the Badgers if they let him go without cause, like if he knocked over a bank or something, I guess. How much does not wanting to pay that buyout affect the decision to stay with the coach? Some colleges have eaten those buyout monies with bigger numbers.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people want to go, is that, hey, that's a number that Wisconsin wouldn't pay. And I think that's fine to speculate on. I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that Wisconsin has decided we don't want Luke Fickell back, but the money is holding us up. I think there's a very real possibility that people like Chris McIntosh and Jennifer Mnookin, who, you know, I believe trusts Chris McIntosh to make decisions. I believe the conclusion by the people who make these decisions is that they still believe in Luke Fickell. So I don't know that the money is the hang up. I do think that if Wisconsin needed to find the $27 to $28 million, they could find it. Now, it's not just those dollars and cents. The optics of it would not look good right now. Number one, you're 3 years out from paying Paul Christ $11 million to not work. So adding a second big buyout that would be even larger this time around, I think would be bad for optics, especially at a time when the university is making really tough decisions in terms of budget cuts with, you know, in the world of academics. So I do think that's something that's probably thought about. The other thing is, not only are you paying a coach to go away if you decide that, you have to bring in a whole new staff. You have to bring in someone to fix that problem, and that won't come cheaply. And you're paying other coaches on Fickell's staff to buy out their contracts, and you're paying whole new coaching staff to come in, right? It's going to be a very, very pricey thing that goes beyond any $28 million starting point, which certainly would be negotiated down and mitigation, I think, would play into that. So you're not talking about actually paying $28 million. But it's going to be a hefty amount of money to get rid of Fickell and hire the whoever you decide to come in and fix the problem.
Jim, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me.
That was Jim Polzine, sports columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal, with us today to talk about the UW Badgers struggling in football this season and what it means for the future of head coach Luke Fickell. 10 major college football programs across the country have agreed to pay their coaches buyouts this season for a combined total of nearly $170 million. We'll turn our attention now to the money in college football and what challenges Wisconsin faces to compete. Amanda Kristovich is a sports business reporter for Front Office Sports, where she covers college sports. Amanda, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Wisconsin keeping their coach now, but we're seeing a lot of colleges pay out these massive buyouts to fire head coaches mid-season. Why is this happening?
I think college football is a very emotional sport. And if you look at the programs that have fired some of the most notable coaches, like Penn State firing James Franklin or LSU firing Brian Kelly, they're not necessarily bad coaches, right? But they just are coaches who haven't lived up to the potential of these programs that are expecting excellence. And, you know, when it comes to coaching buyouts and the amount of money that you're paying, if you're firing a coach mid-season versus at the end of the season, it's really kind of not a lot of money, you know, to do one versus the other, because these buyouts are really based on year to year versus month to month. So I think when you make these decisions, in some cases, you have gotten all of your donors and your boosters together and you've said, hey, we think we have the money, we've gotten it together to pay this buyout, and we're going to go ahead and fire our coach. Or on the other hand, which, you know, seems to be the case at LSU, for example, the coaches or the athletic directors and the boosters and the school don't really know how they're going to pay the buyout, but they've decided it's worth it to just get rid of the coach and figure out the money later.
Yeah, do we know where the money ends up coming from? A lot of these high profile ones are just in the last couple of weeks here. Who picks up the tab to pay the coach not to work?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, it's boosters, because, you know, these major buyouts, these eight-figure numbers, you know, these are not numbers that athletic departments, even those who are bringing in $150, $200 million a year, like, they don't have that money in their back pocket, right? So in a lot of cases, it's bringing together your biggest donors at your university or around your university. And in this case, you are bringing together donors who are probably already contributing a lot of money to NIL and rev share, which is a completely different conversation, right? But there are sort of already diverted resources there. And now you're saying, all right, now we have to come up with this buyout money. But yeah, I would say, you know, my cursory understanding is that it's usually donors and boosters. It's usually not institutional support. I remember Pat Kraft at Penn State a couple of weeks ago, you know, he confirmed, like, he was like, the athletic department is taking on this cost. It will not be the university.
Let's bring NIL into the conversation. Now, a game changer in a lot of ways for college sports, for college football in particular. Mm-hmm. Who is paying that NIL money? Is it the boosters? How are universities organizing to say, well, our players are going to get a taste of some of this money that's flowing out there?
Right. So I think it's easier to think about two categories, right? So there's the revenue sharing money, which, let's just talk about the power conference level. So you need to have $20.5 million at the power conference level, which is the cap for your revenue sharing to compete. Now, some universities kind of at the lower financial end are asking donors to, you know, donate money to the actual athletic department to pay out that rev share amount. But there are a lot of schools that are looking for other revenue streams, right? Like adding other, you know, increasing your ticket prices or coming up with like creative ways to just make a couple extra bucks here and there and throw that all into the rev share pot. And then keep in mind, right, that $20.5 million isn't just for football, it's for all sports. And most schools aren't giving it to all of their sports, they're giving it to like three or four, but that's important to keep in mind. Now, the outside NIL also depends on the school and how they've set up their NIL collectives, which before you could think of as sort of like the boosters and the donors pooling a bunch of money and calling it NIL, but really it was like a salary. Now they have to be a little bit more creative, and a lot of these NIL collectives have become like agencies where they are using the local community, donors, boosters, but also companies, and, you know, they could be local or national, and they're like facilitating deals for players. They're putting together marketing deals. They're putting together events. So that's where a lot of that money is coming from on the third party NIL side. But I would say it's a lot easier to be a school like Texas Tech with some billionaire donors who are just, you know, flooding the school with money than it is to be a program that is trying to cobble together a bunch of local and national deals and, you know, grabbing some extra money from like alcohol sales or ticket sales or something like that.
We're talking to Amanda Kristovich from Front Office Sports about money in college football, how schools are trying to adapt to the world of name, image, and likeness deals for athletes. Amanda, looking right now at a story you reported just earlier this month the Big Ten, big, what are they, 18 or so now, looking at outside investment, a big potential outside investment. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's weird. In the last week or so, I would say the rumors swirling about the potential investment that the Big Ten is considering have kind of calmed down. So for anyone who didn't see that investment, basically the bare bones of it are there is the University of California Systems Pension Fund is offering to invest $2.4 billion into the Big Ten. And they would do that into a separate entity called Big Ten Enterprises, where like each school's media rights and sort of other sponsorship rights would be spun off and put together in this new like private for-profit entity. So it's like a private, it isn't a private equity deal, as a lot of people were saying, but it would function like a private equity deal where you buy it, the pension fund buys in the $2.4 billion, and then each school gets like an immediate payout, like at least $100 million per school. So especially for the schools in the Big Ten that are having some budget issues, it's very attractive, right? But then on the other end, you have to give away an annual cut of your revenue for the next lifetime of the deal, so 15 to 20 years. And then that pension fund has the opportunity to sell that stake to either the schools or somebody else. So there were a lot of concerns about it. Michigan and USC specifically came out against it. And as a result of those two schools really balking at the deal, the conversations, I would say, have kind of like gone underground, sort of been halted, and the Big Ten is now kind of reevaluating.
So much changing, it seems, year to year, even month to month, Amanda. Is it going to be years before all the implications of NIL shake out and we have a new normal for college football?
100%. And that's not just because of how long it's going to take for the current system to sort of become normalized, if you could even call it that. I think that we're only a few years away from yet another major change, which could be athletes becoming employees, or, you know, the need for collective bargaining, or even potentially congressional intervention, which is something that I've been covering, right? Because what you have to keep in mind is that all of these changes have been forced onto the NCAA as a result of lawsuits. And it's become clear that their business model of, you know, running this multi-billion dollar semi-professional sports industry and also trying to cap player earnings is not legal in this country. And the legal mechanisms that other professional leagues use to make salary caps and, you know, free agency and all of those types of things legal is collective bargaining. And the NCAA doesn't want to do that. So the question is, does a court decision force them to do that? Are they successful with Congress in getting Congress to, you know, make their business model legal by writing a new law, right? But I think whether or not either of those things happen, or there's a third option, it's very clear that the current system is not going to be the final system. So with all this change that we've already had, expect more that is beyond just this current system normalizing.
Amanda, thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Amanda Kristovich is a sports business reporter for Front Office Sports, where she covers college sports. We also heard from Wisconsin State Journal sports columnist Jim Polzine. We've been talking about money, coaches, and college football in the midst of a rough Badgers football season.